must we let it end? Where does the time go? Gone too soon, my friend. And where go the echoes of our
time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello, welcome to the new WHFR Journal. Like that extra little toot toot? Yeah, that's the intro for some Jim Hightower commentaries that are going to be featured again this hour. Most Fridays we do that. He's our friendly progressive Texan. Is that an oxymoron? And comes from the Austin, Texas area, where I will be next week, I should say. And I don't want to bum you out here, but maybe it'll give you a special reason to actually tune in to Dennis Reimars, who is with me today. He's getting all excited. He's in charge of the show, and he can do a fantastic show without my interference. It's so fantastic. So, Dennis, you're doing good today?
I am doing well. We had a good time. Well, first, let me say next week you can look forward to a solid hour of the history of Polish dance. Obviously, we'll talk about other things other than Polish dance. Mm-hmm. We may work it in, though. Anyway, I was at the farmer's market this morning.
Yes.
And there were about 13 vendors, because it was, as I said on the air, a blustery day. A little bit of rain, lot of wind, a little bit of cool.
Yeah, so. It's, October is tough for our vendors that come by out there. But at least you know the food stays fresh and crisp a little longer.
Oh, absolutely.
Built-in chill, thanks to Michigan October. And there's still two more weeks to go.
Two more after this one.
The 14th, 21st, and the 28th. Of course, Henry Ford Community College is one of the two co-sponsors, along with Oakwood Hospital, or the Oakwood Health Network, or whatever. And it's a great thing for the community. So try to support that if you can. It's true. It's a little blustery, and some of the vendors have chosen to actually not be back, who were here in the early summer, mainly because like what they were selling is out of season now.
Right.
In some cases.
But I will say, next week we hope this weather continues, because the HFCC representatives will be the ice carving club. So the colder the better. And we had some representation today, but I had a wonderful chance to talk to the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter. So
good.
You go.
Good. Yeah. Well, they're always in need of your support, folks. They're a volunteer group under a small contract from the city, really just a legal thing, not many dollars at all. They have to raise all their funds for themselves, and there's so many sad animal stories. There's so much, so many problems with our domestic pets. I mean, who domesticated them? We did.
Right.
So collectively, we have a responsibility to them, although some people still don't even see a collective responsibility to other human beings. So
right.
it's a stretch, perhaps, whichever way you go on that one. We want to say also at the outset here today, on the website, I did promote, last night I put it up, that we were beginning our series of interviews with challengers to the incumbents, in fact, in the Dearborn Heights City Council election coming up on November 8th. And we had scheduled for today Kathleen Abdel-Haq. That's
Abdel-Haq. Got it.
And we're sad to say she called just an hour ago at 12 noon Friday. Today is, of course, October 14th, 2011. And there was a personal emergency. I think she said, I don't know if we should share it, on her way to the hospital. Hope that she and or her family or loved ones or friends or whoever are doing well, and we will try to reschedule, but our schedule is pretty much already filled up for the next couple of weeks. I will share with you, though, next the two stories. I thought the best one was in the Dearborn Press and Guide by Katie Herrick, who were at the debate that was recorded and is now on cable TV and in Dearborn, and can also be accessed through the internet at the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights. That's lwvddh.org. They're rotating so many times. So if you find the community channel on WOW or Comcast, just wait a sort of an hour or so, and it's going to be at one of the others are going to be up again. There's also debate over the tax increase in Dearborn and the Civil Service Commission. That's all in 1 hour.
Right.
And there's a debate among Dearborn School Board candidates. Four candidates running for, I think, two places. Although it's interesting to me that in neither one of the two articles in the Times Herald and the Press and Guide about that debate, none of them said how many vacancies there are. But there's four candidates, and two of them are incumbents. So my guess is there's two slots available that the incumbents were in, and they'd like to go back probably. And we can talk about that later. But we will look at Wednesday Press and Guide, October 12th here. I'd like to share with you the story about the Dearborn Heights candidate debate. Now, we do have scheduled and will have on the other two challengers, if you will, for the console. And coming up in 2 weeks, Dennis, is Lisa
Hicks Clayton. Or Clayton Hicks.
Clayton Hicks, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then Scott Craig is coming up right before the election on November 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting group of candidates. So I'd like to share with you right now, and again, Kathy Abdel-Haq cannot be on our show today because of a personal emergency. We will see if she can reschedule, but it's going to be tight because we already are booked. So this is unfortunate. But we do refer you to the cable television broadcast of the debate, even though they only get a few minutes to respond to each question. Just like these articles, they only get a few minutes, 50 words or less. And I don't think you can really judge a person, a candidate, at 50 words, whether or not you want to vote for them and have them represent you. So on this show, we try to give them, 15 or 20 minutes,
right,
at least in this case. That's actually a lot of time for one person, and I think you get a much better idea of what they're all about. Why don't we do the incumbents? Because if you don't already know them, that's your problem, okay? If they haven't set a record for themselves, if they haven't been in the papers, if they haven't been doing things and out shaking hands already, that's their problem in a way. The challengers may have some good new ideas or new energy and enthusiasm, and they don't have the access to the forums and the connections and just the chance to have been constantly in the press for the last couple of years that the people in office already have. So we'd like to give them some attention that way. And we picked the Dearborn Heights Council race this year to focus on, and we'll see how that comes out, of course. So here it is, Katie Herrick's story from the Dearborn Press and Guide, Wednesday, October 12th. She says, an incumbent, an active mom, and an outsider with outside ideas, don't they all? No, maybe not, squared off during the recent debate among Dearborn Public School Board candidates. Voters in Northeast Dearborn Heights will help select the winners November 8th. Incumbent Mary Petchlikoff talked about issues and programs going on in the district. Returning candidate Roxanne McDonald, seen her name on the ballot before, that's why she's returning. She touted her involvement and vowed to do more to protect art and music programs. I guess she was the mom, the active mom. Okay. And newcomer Stephen Stanley Dabkowski Jr., who's been on this show.
He sure has.
He was part of the Charter Commission for a while in Dearborn until they kicked him off because they claimed he didn't have a Dearborn residency, but it was because his house had burned down. And the long story there, he finally did not get a chance to be on the final deliberations of the Charter Commission. He also ran for another office since then. Was it city council or clerk or something? And we've talked to him before. Yes, he is a distant relative of mine through my first wife.
That's
but now
right.
that I'm divorced, I guess, does that cut off the connection?
Kind of.
Yeah. So, but, okay. So her story is very interesting. And Times Herald, no disservice to the person that wrote that story. I won't mention your name. Besides Katie Herrick's being much longer and more detailed, and she has three pictures there, too. So if you want to see at least satisfactory, it's not Millard Berry photographs, of course, but satisfactory photographs of Dabkowski, McDonald, and Petchlikoff. There they are. Okay. Stephen has got his eyes closed, but it doesn't mean he sleeps most of the time or he's nodding off. You know, it's just they shouldn't use a picture of somebody from a debate who's got their eyes closed. That's my personal feeling.
I agree.
Okay. And who knows, if it was a video, sometimes people actually contemplate their words by closing their eyes briefly.
You know, a lot of people do that.
They're reflecting by having the thoughts bounce off the back of their eyelids.
And then we hope something very wise comes out.
Okay. Well, Dabkowski, at the outset, he started a little bit of flurry there, even before the debate started. He passed out a piece of paper that promised to return his board member salary if it was used to create a program to educate parents on how to help their children. Okay. That he thinks that parents need some education about raising their kids and helping to educate their kids in the Dearborn Public Schools.
It's an interesting platform to run for election.
Well, you know, Dennis, we have a new show on the fourth Monday of every month, on the Monday Forum, as we call it, from 6 to 7 p.m., and available on our archive for the last two shows. And the next one is coming up on Monday.
Parent Connect?
No, a week from Monday. It's called Parent Connection.
Yes.
And it's hosted by the Dearborn Public Schools liaison in matters of this sort, Margaret Ahmed King.
It's a good show. Actually.
I'm sorry, Margaret King Ahmed. Okay, she's the wife of Ishmael Ahmed. Okay, but before she was Margaret King. Okay, anyway, so Margaret King Ahmed, I'll get it. Hi, Margaret. She's coming in the studio today. Hope she's listening. How much fun I'm having with her name. Well, it's a big plug for her show,
Is.
So we hope to have it recorded today and to have it go in for the fourth Monday. And that is a week from Monday.
Sure.
Right. So, in fact, we're trying to do our part because she's got experts coming in from the schools. There was a school, a psychiatrist, I believe, that came in and they talked about, it was a literacy issue, I think, whatever it was, things that parents need to know in regard to raising their kids and or getting their kids ready for a good education in the Dearborn Public Schools. Now, it's just a show. You have to listen to it. You have to take notes yourself and then try to implement it. So it may not be an effective way. I think Stephen Dabkowski Jr. here is suggesting a formal program of workshops or, you know, gatherings in the neighborhoods, maybe at the schools themselves for the interested parents who really want to do. I mean, what should they do to help them with homework or even healthy eating? And should they have a breakfast in the morning before they come in? Yes, they should. So there's all kinds of ideas that the school does know about, and people like facilitators like Margaret King Ahmed, you know, nice could job. Tell you about if you asked her. And so that's featured on our Parent Connection show, which is, again, produced by Margaret, who is with the Dearborn Public Schools as a sort of a liaison counselor with the parents right now. So I understand what he's getting at.
It's how he does it, though. Well, no. I mean, I wonder if that alienates people, potential voters.
It alienated the other debaters because it was before the debate. You see?
Very good point.
So he got more time, if you will, and he got press on this whole issue, and he didn't have to subtract from his time given for answering questions. So it was a little bit of an unfair advantage, whether or not they're in favor of that or not. I think it's a very possible idea. So he's willing. Of course, it's only a part-time job anyway, so it's not that much money, but he's willing to give his salary back if they can set up such a program.
It's like a charitable act in his mind, you know? Yeah. So that's, right. You know what, and don't we all say that? You've been an instructor, you know, before you retired for 40 years. Don't you agree that the crucial education begins at home? And then they bring that, and then the influence of the school is a separate.
The environment has to be right to encourage that.
To encourage it, supportive, things like that. You
both
know?
Of my parents, my mother graduated from high school. My father hadn't. He just got a job at Chrysler Corporation when he was, I don't know, 16 or something.
Right.
And had that job, except barring strikes, all of his life. And they said, look, you're getting into algebra, you're getting into college prep stuff. We can't help you. You need to do it yourself. But you need to do it, you know, if you want to make something of yourself in the future. And I just had, I thought that was very good and upfront and honest, is that, the burden was on me, but they were being very honest about their own limitations. And of course, being an only child, there was no other distractions in the house.
But if you need a ride somewhere, they took you. See, that's what I mean by supportive.
Well, in my day, we walked or rode our bicycles all the time.
True.
In fact, the schools are now recommending that so the kids can fight all the calories that they're taking in from junk food.
Oh, my gosh.
Is that parents should stop driving their kids to school. You know, that's why we have neighborhood schools in Dearborn. Right. My walk took 45 minutes to high school.
That's not that bad.
Well, no. In the winter, you say, well, it's so cold in Michigan winters. Yeah, I walked it in Michigan winters. I've been so crazy to ride my bicycle on ice and snow in Michigan winters,
right,
just to cut a little time off that.
Sure.
I mean, you know, it was below zero. You know, if you have if you're walking like crazy, you're generating heat. And I didn't need gym class, although they forced us in gym to have gym class. But
right.
Anyway.
But you're a better person for it, right?
Well,
let's just go with it.
I'm not afraid of a little exercise.
There you
let's
go.
Let's put it that way.
So something good came
yeah.
out.
Yeah. And it's interesting here, and we'll get into some of the details that the people talked about. Good article, and they have a title over every major topic that was covered in the debate. So it's not just a title to the article in the Press and Guide. This is Wednesday, October 12th, on this school board debate among three of the four candidates. But there's also a topic heading, so I think it's easier to understand and to follow the story through. I like that kind of approach, especially if it's a longer story.
Right.
You know, so you see, here's the next major issue, here's the next major issue. And you do want to read them all, of course, I would think. Anyway, incumbent Joseph Guido, name will appear on the ballot, but he didn't attend the forum October 4th. Mm. Doesn't say why. Maybe he understands that as an incumbent, he's almost automatically a write-in. He's got a known name. Has he caused any trouble for himself in the last year or two? I don't think so. There's no big scandal there. So, you know, why have a debate if you think you're going to win anyway? Now, he may have had a personal conflict, a work conflict. We don't know. Just saying. Incumbents, they already been out there, and people should know you or not. And you have, just because your name says incumbent on the ballot, it's a built-in advantage for the people that don't know who to vote for. Well, have anything bad about him, I just guess I'll vote for him, let him stay there.
He got his name in the paper regardless for not being there.
Yes, he did.
And you know, the thing about it is, and I think we've all...
That either looks good or bad.
Right. Know. Well, but we've heard this before where, you know, actually going to the debate may hurt him more than not. And there could be reasons. I've heard this a lot. And it's a strategy, isn't it?
Well, in these early presidential debates, nationally known presidential debates for Republican candidates, it can be disastrous.
Right.
I mean, I think Rick Perry discovered that after only about two or three debates.
Very good point.
Just being a little bit befuddled and holding back a little bit and getting a couple things wrong. Michelle Bachmann had some problems with that too.
Right.
I mean, she was very definite during the debate that this was the fact, and then later everybody said, including Fox News, she didn't get it accurate. That wasn't the way it was. But so that's when it can really hurt you is the image from a television debate that a lot of people watch. And since this other one is on cable, even though it's like showing day and night every 2 hours,
right?
It's not that many people are going to watch it.
Huh.
It just seems boring compared to the other big-time, you know, talent shows like Can You Dance or Can You Sing or whatever they're called.
Do you still watch Glee? Do you like
it's that? A guilty pleasure.
Okay, no, I'm not.
Yeah, it's just for the music videos.
That's many people do, so you're not alone.
Yeah. I mean, all the high school stories. Oh, I mean, I remember high school and was more stupid than even they show, but it's pretty stupid, all their story plots. But it's supposed to be a comedy, sort of.
Is it? Okay. Well, yeah, Jane Lynch.
I mean,
sure.
Really. Yeah, there's not heavy drama.
Okay, good.
Or at least they're not able to provide heavy drama.
And after
they may try for it, but it doesn't work.
After talking to you, I don't feel like I'm missing anything. Good.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Dabkowski also suggested that there should be a regional taxing authority to support the schools. And, of course, Mary Petrikoff said, we don't have any power over setting that up. That's our legislature. So you may believe that. It's a wonderful idea. And we have said that we agreed with Jack Lessenberry and other people that are less controversial, urban planners, too, that maybe there should be a Detroit should become Greater Detroit. I know suburbs, we don't want to be part of what Detroit is doing and blah, blah, blah. But we need a regional transit plan. We need a regional development plan. And a taxing authority for the region would help Detroit, and I think amazingly would help the suburbs too if we saw this whole Greater Detroit area as a common need, as a common community, like the large extended communities of other urban areas across the U.S. that are doing a great job, that are really advancing, that because they've moved their city limits further out to include the former suburbs. And this is how they continue to have the money and the growth, and the planning for the whole area is consistent.
Well, because you can tap into so many more resources.
Yeah, and I didn't think of mentioning that if it was the school district that expanded too. I'm not in favor personally, and of course, you know, folks, the opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Okay, so don't blame them, and they didn't tell us what to say here, and they may totally disagree, whoever they are, okay?
That's right.
But I believe in local schools and local support. I don't believe in busing kids. I'd like to have neighborhood schools again. I don't care what the cost is. I'd like them to be able to walk to school. I'd like the parents to be able to get to the school with them as they need to for conferences and meetings. So they need to be close by. And the curriculum needs to be controlled locally and regionally. Sure, the state can come up with guidelines. The federal government can come up with guidelines. But you can't have all of this forced standards that the teachers on the front lines, if you will, know aren't going to work.
And then penalize them if they don't meet the standard. Those are this is something, whatever, in my craw,
well,
but you don't penalize a school district because they don't meet the standards. You encourage them and you figure out ways to help them.
And I'm reflecting on my 40 years of teaching at, I actually started in junior high and elementary schools just for a couple of years before I came to Henry Ford Community College. But my daughter, of course, is on the front lines of Southfield Public Schools. She's a science teacher in the seventh grade in Southfield and for, I think, about 12, 13 years now. So I've heard those stories for quite a while, and I'm sure Dearborn is not too much different in many ways about what's needed here. We need to empower the teachers. We also need to involve, like Stephen Dabkowski Jr. said, the parents. He said, well, what if the parents don't want to be involved? What are they doing? What are they saying to their kids? You know, that is a problem there, but we need to provide the opportunity for them to relate to the schools and the problems of their kids in the schools as much as we can, I think. How the program should actually be set up, I don't know if it can be. Everybody was in agreement at the debate about anti-bullying.
Yeah.
Well, Is that a slam dunk? Of course. And there was a big meeting here at Henry Ford Community College that the community came to one Wednesday night a couple weeks ago. What is bullying and why should it not happen? And
it's right on the cover of the Wednesday Times Herald. No bullying. They're wearing pink at Bryant Middle School. Yeah.
Pink? Is that the color of no bullying?
I don't know. Because that would
pink means so much these days.
It does. Pink Shirt Day, an event meant to prevent bullying.
I thought it was an anti-AIDS thing initially.
And it was a cancer awareness as
well. Cancer awareness, too. Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know.
Maybe we all should dress in pink all the time.
I don't know. That seems like they would promote bullying. You know what I mean?
Well, hey, you're wearing pink. I'm going to say a few things about you. And
but apparently, Pink Shirt Day on October 5th.
Take away your bologna sandwich.
That's right.
Okay, whatever.
That's funny.
Yeah, careful wearing pink, folks. I think that is not necessarily a good idea in the schools among the kids. And maybe pink is in. Is it
I don't know.
Hello Kitty wear pink? Or
I don't know. You know, I'm too old for this.
Yeah, okay. larger class size. Special cost says, we don't have the kind of numbers alarmists say that the problem we're having. Excuse me, there is a basic logic there, Mary, and I've met Mary, she's a nice person, but if you have more people, your amount of contact and your ability to talk or relate to all the students at the same moment is diminished.
Right.
That's just simple math. That's simple math. One more person splits up your time and contact time with that person, and the group as a whole, the more, the bigger it gets. There's always a percentage of people that fall asleep or are thinking about something coming up or something that happened. They're distracted. There's always a percentage that never will get the message, no matter how good the teacher is. I mean, if they didn't get a good night's sleep, they're exhausted. They're asleep.
Right.
They're nodding off.
Right.
Okay, they can't concentrate. So I'm just saying there's all kinds of reasons, and it's a basic principle of communication, that a percentage, sometimes as much as 10%, of any group will not get the message at that point in time. And so what teachers have to, if you have a smaller class size, guess what? That percentage stays the same, but the number of people that don't get the message diminishes. And if there's only one person falling asleep out of a group of 10, okay, the other nine are really staring hard and nudging that person because it's everybody's noticing.
But not only that,
so you can easily hide and fall asleep back in a classroom of 35.
Right. But with smaller classrooms, that one person that normally falls asleep can get one-on-one time that's not affordable with a bigger class.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in my own experience as a kid, I had bigger classes and smaller classes. Detroit Public Schools for my elementary education all the way through Livonia Public Schools, through high school in Flat Rock, Michigan, big Flat Rock, and all the way into college. And even in college, the better classes, the ones I learned more, had fewer students in them. More access directly to the teachers to ask questions and so on. That interaction is what really makes learning fun, first of all, and also much more effective because it's reinforcement, it's redirection constantly. So don't tell me that the studies aren't in about the negative effects of larger class size. Well, one or two more can't hurt. Of course it hurts to the percentage of the increase. Of course it does. Okay? That is just crazy. I don't know how they're looking or analyzing, on a true-false test.
Right.
Well, they all do pretty much the same, whether or not there's 30 or 35. That's not the only criteria. Mm-mm. Who really understood? Who can apply that knowledge later? How well-learned was it?
You're right. And the fact that they enjoy learning means that they will continue to learn. It's just, right. I mean, there's a built-in motivation.
All of them agree the cuts are hard to find. We didn't talk about Roxanne McDonald. Looks like her major issue is that she's in favor of arts and music education being continued. Mary Petrikoff said, well, we've cut it down in the district because low enrollment. Kids don't want to take it.
Well, it's the first thing cut regardless. We all know that.
Well, first of all, in my day, excuse me, art and music were required.
Yes.
Not much. It was like one class a year in either art or music.
Sure, mine
it
too.
Was required of everybody, just like shop class for the guys and very sexist cooking classes for the girls.
Home ec or whatever.
Home ec.
Sure.
Right, as it was called. And I was desperate to get in a home ec class. I wanted to learn how to cook.
You wanted to be a well-rounded individual.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I mean, I knew that if I was single for a while and I need to learn how to cook. How cool to find out with my friends, you know, how to do it. Now, after, you know, the Stone Ages, when I went to high school, they started incorporating guys and into the so-called home ec classes, and girls then could take the shop classes, right, too. And guess what? Shop classes are home ec required. Required. You had to have some sort of practical skills, just like a general business class, which also is not required, to teach you the differences in how to use your money.
Right.
You know, differences between a bank and a credit union, how to choose a checking account, what is interest, what is compound interest. I had that in the ninth grade. Why? It was required of everybody. The only thing I didn't get was a real good nutrition class.
Really?
What are the good foods to eat? And that's because they didn't know what the good foods were in my day.
Right.
I mean, they had some ideas, but they were all wrong. Like they, like most doctors would say, oh, no, no, it's too fatty. Don't eat peanuts. Don't eat nuts. Now, nuts is one of the healthiest things you can eat,
right,
these days because of the fiber and the other good things that are in there. Even coffee, we finally discovered, except for people with extreme heart problems where a little extra caffeine might over-agitate their, right, their heartbeat, it's fine.
Sure.
It's actually got phytonutrients, you know. It's, and just like chocolate,
mm-hmm,
now, not the sugar part, but you know, dark chocolate itself has got some really healthy things, not in excess, but you know, healthy things going. So it's you know, but I think we should teach healthy eating. In my day, we had no sex education classes.
No,
and I think that kids' bodies are changing right then around age 12, 14, whatever.
Right.
I think there has to be some science-based courses, at least to explain to them, maybe not to set their morality. The parents can do that.
Sure.
What is happening?
Right.
What is really happening? A lot of parents, I'm sorry to say, even today, don't know actually what is happening.
Sure.
When those sexual changes come about for the girls and the boys and what to tell them. That's something Parent Connection might get into, but we got to probably watch the language.
Right,
in that.
Right. I'll never forget when my son came to me with questions, and it's an awkward time, but you handle it. You definitely handle it.
Yeah.
So you said that the one candidate is very much in favor.
Roxanne McDonald.
She's,
yeah.
Is there almost her whole platform based on?
Well, I'm sure it isn't, because she comments on these other issues too, but it seemed like the Katie Herrick used it as sort of the summary of her positions. And I feel that, you know, art and music, they shouldn't be considered like extracurricular.
But they always do, and they're the first things cut.
You can have your choice of several different types. It should be required of everybody to make some choice about, you know, the arts. Even if you don't draw well or paint well or sculpt well or whatever,
right,
you should be forced to try.
Well, no, I know.
I mean, just to see what it's all about. You know, I remember I had art classes required. I had a draw. I wasn't very good, but I learned a lot. It was an interesting process. You know, teachers were inspiring, and I wasn't graded down for not being Picasso or something.
No, you know? But the point is that you got exposure you otherwise wouldn't have had.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't sing, so I didn't choose music.
Well,
curious. I really had a bad singing
voice.
When
my kids were at Edsel Ford, they said, sure, you can take part in sports. Sure, you can do music and choir and all these things. You just have to pay a little bit because we don't have the money. Have you heard this?
Well, that's of course, that's what I would call after-school extracurriculars. Like,
sure,
if you go out for the play, well, rehearsal a couple hours long. You can't fit that into a daytime schedule.
Right, right.
And there are a lot more academic classes required. Thank you, State of Michigan. That was good for the sake of graduation.
Right.
Because I think the requirements were getting pretty lax there, folks.
They were, you're right.
They're just barely getting back to what was required when I was in school in the 60s. Amazing that it was all diluted and, oh, take anything you want to.
Right.
Oh, crazy. People can't do math. They don't know science. They, you know, so much they don't know about the world. Everybody should have at least a little knowledge on a broad spectrum, and that's what high school should do for you and get you ready for college, of course, because if you don't go to college, you're pretty much set for life in a hole. You know, you're not going to have a decent job. You're not going to have money if there is a job to be found.
We heard it. We hear it all the time here, yeah, that the associate's degree is the new college diploma.
Where was it last week? There was a story of Durban Public School. They're starting a big program because they want more people to graduate. We only have like an 80% graduation rate.
Wow.
Now, there's reasons. Kids might move away or something. But only 80% that start high school in Dearborn get a degree. That is pathetic. Now, in Detroit, let's not talk about that. I think it might be less than half,
right,
graduate after starting. And whatever the reasons are, that's got to be reversed. I mean, without high school, well, with high school, you're still in pretty bad shape in terms of a future and a career. Who want to employ you in our high-tech world today? You know, why do you think the jobs are going to India and China and elsewhere? Sure, they're not paying them anything, but for example, in China, those people know how to assemble an iPad, an iPhone. They know how to, do our students qualify for those heavy computer-related robotic kinds of situations? No clue. Most of our high school students would not be qualified to go into those high-tech jobs, which they're already training them for in those countries. So I don't begrudge them in India and China for these jobs. They don't treat their workers very well. They certainly don't pay them any money, but it is lower standard of living anyway. But come on, at least they had the preparation. We didn't, you know, so it's our fault. Anyway, so they didn't bring that up in the debate. Just to conclude this, and this is in lieu of Kathy Abdelhak not being able to be on our show today. We've done this story for the first half hour here on the Journal about the debate, and you should try to find the video either at LWV. DDH, that's League of Women Voters, DearbornHeights.org. They have all the videos from all the three different debates we talked about here on different topics, different candidates, different offices available there, as well as the City of Dearborn has got a couple of them on their site too. Changing school start times. Couldn't believe this. They haven't moved them to starting later. The schools are still starting at 7:20.
Right.
I remember our superintendent, Brian Winston, and others, last year, the studies clearly show that kids do better if they start a little bit later. Well, for Pete's sake, make the change. What? Now, the only thing I will say is some parents, like my daughter goes into work, she has to be at work, well, the school, at 7:30. That's when they start. So she goes in to arrive before 7. So what do we do with my granddaughter? Okay, well, I'm there, but she's found a, because I believe in education rather than just listening to me, she's enrolled in a University of Michigan Dearborn school right here in Dearborn. So they have early childcare, and that's what she pays for.
That's exactly. Dubkowski was against the later start time, saying that it could pose a problem for parents. Quote, when you start adjusting starting times and delivering these children to school, the parents' work schedule is affected, he said.
Provide the daycare.
You have to be careful how you adjust those times, is not what he said. And I agree that there are options.
Right. The school should be providing that daycare earlier, right at the same building, maybe serving them breakfast if needed, and getting them all ready for class.
Do you think that the kids would like to go in later? I do.
Absolutely.
I guarantee you that it would motivate them.
I still hate mornings.
I know you do.
I mean, my mother would drag me out of bed, and it's time. Oh, my gosh. What is it? She said, it's 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock.
No, I know that there are kids. When I would take my kids to school, there were kids already there because their parents had to drop them off early, and they were served breakfast. So there is that program. Now, with the money, with the cuts, I have no idea if that still exists.
Right. They need at least paraprofessionals, teachers, as well as nutritionalists to take care of these kids. Usually they all have to be potty trained by the time they go to the regular schools.
Yeah, that's 6, 7 years old.
Yeah. So we need to do that for the kids, and we want them to achieve more, so a later start would do that. And sure, we can accommodate the parents' schedule by extending daycare into the morning hours if it isn't already there. I don't know where it is.
Okay.
But, I mean, these things that are clearly proven logically to be done need to be done, and you say, well, it's going to cost a little more money, then we'll have to find the money somewhere, okay? Let the rich people pay for it. I'm willing to pay for it. My daughter is paying for it out of her own salary for the U of MD program for my granddaughter. I mean, you know, I mean, you do what you have to do as a parent to make sure your child gets the right education. Okay, so look into that story more. We are recommending the Dearborn Press and Guides version of it from this last Wednesday. Occupy Detroit is going to start today.
That's right.
Despite what people thought was going to be next week, Friday. And so here's Jim Hightower. He's got two commentaries that he did on two different days, back-to-back, Jim Hightower, about occupying Wall Street. Please listen closely.
To paraphrase a Bob Dylan song, Something's happening here, and you don't know what it is, do you, Miss Belafonte? A New York Times writer, Jania Belafonte, is but one of many establishment reporters and pundits who've been covering the fledgling Occupy Wall Street movement, but completely missing the story. Instead of really digging in to what's happening here, they've resorted to fuddy-duddy mockery of an important populist protest that has sprouted right in Wall Street's front yard. In her article, Belafonte dismissed the young people's efforts as fractured and airy, calling it a carnival in an intellectual vacuum. Their cause is so diffuse and leaderless, she wrote, that its purpose is virtually impossible to decipher. Participation, she announced, is dwindling. Wow, so snide yet so wrong. While the establishment is befuddled by the plethora of issues and slogans within the protest and put off by its festive spirit, that's their problem. The 20 and 30-somethings who are driving this movement know what they're doing and are far more organized than those accustomed to conventional hierarchical protests seem able to comprehend. It's silly to say that the protesters' purpose is indecipherable. Hello, they're encamped next door to Wall Street. Isn't that a clue? They want what America's workaday majority wants. Stop the gross greed of financial and corporate elites and expel a political class that's so corrupted by the money of those wealthy elites that it has turned its back on the middle class and the poor. This is Jim Hightower saying, such movements don't begin with a neat set of solutions, but with roiling outrage focused on the plutocratic perpetrators of injustice. These young people are on target and on the move. Don't ridicule them. Join them. Go to OccupyWallStreet.org. That's OccupyWallST.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
We're just going to go back live because they're similar in the fact that Wall Street is a symbol of all the things in finance that are wrong in this country for the general population, the general public, that people are getting advantages, financial advantages, unfairly, really, unequally to the rest of us. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And there's almost no middle class left to the situation. Can it be reversed? Of course it can. But yes, you're going to have regulations. You're going to have higher taxes for those people making more money. You're going to have to have a lot of changes to the tax system. Believe it or not, Herman Keynes, not that he's going to get the idea across to people, but his 999 proposal, if you look at the details, and it's fairly simple and straightforward, could actually be a big help. So would the fair tax in general, to straightening out the special advantages. So Occupy Wall Street does have all kinds of important messages. And I noticed that today, Mayor Bloomberg was planning at 7 o'clock this morning to go in with power washing machines to get all the people out of the park that they were in. He said, well, we got to clean it up. We're going to go with power wash. You know, those 10,000
PSI
pressure things to blast the whole place. Well, obviously, that's also a nice crowd control device, too, right. Let me tell you. He postponed it. So New York City government blinked. By the way, the people are not living in dirt and grime. They have organized their health brigades, and they have now, since they've been there a while, they have set up their own system of keeping clean and neat and taking care of the trash. They have asked for some dumpsters and some porta-johns, too, which would help tremendously, but oh no, they might stay longer than, you know.
Well, you know, they don't want to make them more comfortable, obviously.
Well, the Occupy Various Cities movement with similar goals in general to what Jim Hightower talked about is spreading worldwide. In Michigan, in Lansing, we know that it started sometime earlier this week, maybe even last weekend. I just heard this morning that Mayor Virge Bonaro of Lansing actually sat down and met with the groups and the people there, talking to them, giving them ideas, and they gave him ideas, no doubt, on Tuesday.
That's
and
awesome.
You said there's a reporter from here?
Deborah Tackett. She's our copy editor and a reporter, and she's in Lansing right now. She's going to write about it. In fact, it'll come out
In the Mirror newspaper.
The Mirror News, yeah.
Okay.
And then we have two writers that were contemplating going down to Detroit, and they were here a few minutes ago.
Yeah. The Detroit thing looks like something happened with their organizational system or whatever. They have moved up. I had heard that the date was October 21st it would start.
Right.
And just yesterday I got an email that, it's today,
right.
October 14th at 4 o'clock. And now I can't find, honestly, I can't find that slip of paper that I Xeroxed. So where would that be? I don't know. You could go to OccupyDetroit.org.
Or Google Occupy Detroit.
Yeah, Google Occupy Detroit and try to find that out. It is important to, if you believe in the fact that we need change, stand up and be countered, if you will, and it's an ongoing thing. Maybe you can't stay at night, but just being there and talking to people for a while, that will help the cause. These kinds of demonstrations won't bring about change. I mean, the government, they're in their nice warm buildings. Wall Street's inside the Wall Street buildings. So whether somebody's outside protesting or not won't directly change what they're doing. And, of course, these protests are intended to be and trying to be enforced to be totally nonviolent. Yes, they're a little messy. Reality is messy sometimes. But if people need to show their concerns, it needs to be on television. It needs to be fairly reported. And right now, of course, it's not being, in my opinion. So anyway, Occupy Detroit supposedly starts today at 4 o'clock somewhere in downtown Detroit.
Right.
I'm sorry, I don't know where that is. So Google Occupy Detroit, find out about that. It won't just be one day. It will be continuing for a while. Okay, we wanted to cover the story that is only on dearborn.patch.com.
Right.
At this point, a lawsuit has been filed to remove the Civil Service Commission question from the November ballot in Dearborn. You know, that is a ballot proposal that was endorsed by our city council to be put on the ballot. It says that we don't need a Civil Service Commission anymore because union contracts supersede it. And that maybe we might have a Human Rights Commission or a Human Resources Commission later, it suggests. Well, guess what? The lawsuit says this should be taken off the ballot, and it is former Civil Service Commission Chair Marjorie Powell who filed the lawsuit here. Okay, now you know that she's in a heated court case with the city since last year after she was forced out of the commission for not taking her oath of office in a timely manner. Her current lawsuit claims that both ousting her and her current Human Resources Director Valerie Murphy Goodrich is the true reason for the civil service ballot question. So the Human Resources Director Valerie Murphy Goodrich has been against eliminating the Civil Service Commission, and she would lose her job because she reports to the Civil Service Commission right now if this was passed. So obviously trying to protect her job, of course, but also feels, here's the 2 points, okay? And first of all, these people know what they're talking about. Marge Powell served in her volunteer position on the commission for 18 years. Murphy Goodrich, who is the paid employee of the city, was hired by and whose salary is set by the commission, has held her position for 15 years. Both women, the lawsuit reads, quote, have been a thorn in the side of city officials by intervening in attempts to use political influence in hiring and staffing decisions, unquote, which, of course, should not be the only or even the primary or secondary or tertiary reason why someone should get a job, I think, again. WHFR opinion, which maybe no one else's. The suit makes two assertions that the proposal is in violation of Michigan law. First, that the ballot proposal is disingenuous, quote-unquote, and therefore creates bias in the minds of the voters, stating that the provisions in these union contracts take precedence over civil service policies. That's not true, because union contracts don't contain language concerning hiring, while civil service rules do. And secondly, that Dearborn is one of the few Michigan cities that still even has, I put the word even in there, a civil service commission. And that's not true. In fact, even in the debate that was televised, it had to be brought up. And the city is still saying, oh, no other cities really around here have it. Well, it's just totally untrue because guess what, folks? Detroit, not a small city, has a civil service commission. Livonia, Westland, Taylor, and our friends right next door in Dearborn Heights. So that's a good smattering of significant communities. Maybe the others don't. But nobody can say that, like, whoa, we're the only ones. Nobody needs it anymore. That is in the ballot. They're claiming that. So that's two mostly false claims, or at least, as it says in her lawsuit, disingenuous.
Right.
It's misleading. Sure. It sort of sets up a bias against them, against the current Civil Service Commission. Secondly, is that the ballot question actually encompasses two issues. The second is, because it suggests, well, you know, in the future we might create a human resources commission. Well, if you vote for it, then I guess you're kind of endorsing it.
Right.
So, in fact, you're voting on really two things, and they say a ballot proposal can only do one thing at a time. If it's two issues, like we think a human resources commission should happen or should be able to happen after, if we lose a civil service commission, that's a whole separate issue.
Two issues, yeah.
As I see it. And I'm sorry, I've agreed with the legal language and the lawsuits that Morris Goodman has filed for Marge Powell on behalf of the situation. I don't really know about the hiring issues in detail, but I don't think the commission is doing anything wrong, and the Charter Commission didn't see anything wrong with still having it a couple years ago. And so I'm just suspicious of the motivations also for putting this on the ballot, especially since the way the proposal is worded seems to me to be misleading. I use that word, not disingenuous, because some people don't know what disingenuous means. Okay. Not necessarily you, gentle listener. Okay. Morris Goodman, of course, has his unpaid commentary that's in Press and Guide frequently. As a liberal, as a Democrat. Okay. So you got to know what's happening, so we may or may not see that there. I would think the ballot's already been printed. I mean, we're only 3 weeks away.
Right.
So they may just give the instructions, or they may just turn off the machines, and even though it's actually on the printed ballots, they'll say, you can vote for it or not, it won't count, you know, because it's the judge has an injunction against it being on the ballots, so which means we won't count them, but it's got to be there already.
It would be interesting to see if people just went ahead and voted anyway, and to see how that would play out.
Yeah, but if they got the injunction against it, they won't tabulate it. They I'm sure legally they don't even want to know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You going to that?
I've got plenty of stuff here.
All right.
What do you got?
Well, nothing. I was just
nothing. He's got nothing.
I got less than
thanks,
nothing.
Dennis.
You're welcome. I'll see you later. Have a nice time in
okay.
Texas.
Yeah. Right. Going right to the capital of Texas. I mean, Perry.
Yeah, but you're not going for any there. Political reasons. You're going for just pure enjoyment, right?
No, well, there is the Austin Film Festival going on, which is a screenwriting conference, as well as some movies at nighttime. And when I was teaching media writing here, screenplay writing, for many years, that was my key source of new information about what the standards are these days and who's doing what and why, or what are the techniques that are, you know, allowing people to have their script sold to television and film and so on. So it was a key part of my education was to go down there for that reason, and I still enjoy it. And the Texas Book Festival is going on.
So that intrigues me.
And book festivals I've never gone to before, but that's where, in this case, over 150 authors on all different categories of books will be there in person making presentations and, signing books in separate times elsewhere. And it's really crazy with Texas Book Festival. It's at Austin, the Capitol, and they use the Capitol buildings. So the authors are going to be making presentations in the House chambers, the House of Representatives, in the Senate chambers, and in other places right there in the Capitol building. And some of the tents, like they put all the cooking authors out in a tent because all that smoke and fire,
that's
you know,
funny.
From the demos. So there are going to be tents created for all the authors and their presentations. Music tent, where musicians will be actually playing who have written books.
Okay.
You see, there's a book connection there, too. And so, I guess the Capitol, they just turn off the legislature for 3 days.
So even if you wanted to, you couldn't get away from politics because you're going to be right down in the middle of
it. Right there in the Capitol, yeah. Right. It's just interesting, ironic to me, Michigan, to my knowledge, has never had a book festival.
No, but that sounds really cool.
I mean, a book festival. I mean, the authors talk about their books. They debate them, other authors. They, you know, all the current books and politics and self-help and nutrition, and it's huge. And I've always wanted to go to them, but they were either in Chicago or New York or L.A. or Dallas. And now it happens to be in the same city I'm going to be in at the same time.
Right.
And I'm into books and even ebooks sometimes. I have to admit, I have read a few ebooks, but I don't like it.
You really don't?
I don't like the experience.
Okay.
But also, after I read it, how can I give it to you, Dennis, to read or
good
anybody else?
Point.
I mean,
very
the books
point.
I can hand around to friends and they're still there, underlined with my inimitable notes.
No, and I agree. I'm a print fan. At the same time, the ebooks are very convenient, and I like the idea when I travel of having one source for however many books I want.
I find that some titles, some books, I want to read right now, immediately. I don't even want to wait for the delivery from Amazon or whoever.
Right.
And so I have gotten ebooks that way. Cool. Okay. A couple letters to the editor here in our time remaining. It's only 6 minutes that we have left, and Highway 61 with Joanne Kay comes up at 2 o'clock today, and we're going to have a live band here unless there's an emergency at the last minute. last comment, Kathleen Abdelhak had a personal emergency today and could not appear on the show as scheduled. One of the five candidates for two places on the Dearborn City Council.
Three places, five people.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Right. And there's two incumbents.
Right.
One of them being our very own Ned.
Yeah, I'm not clear. There's somebody who's not running, but her name's going to be on the ballot. She's an incumbent, but she's not going to run again.
Hmm.
But her name's going to be on the ballot.
Well, then there are...
Well, I think that's a third place you're talking about.
Interesting, okay.
See, there's Barron... And there's
Opigian, right?
Yeah, Ken Barron, who's the chairperson, if you will, of the council, head of the council, president, we call him in Dearborn,
right?
And Ned Opigian, and then there's this other woman who's just not going to be returning. But guess what? Her name's on the ballot, so I don't know if you vote for her, you're in trouble because it won't count.
It's like voting for the commission,
right? But that's the third vacancy, if you will, even though her name is there. So it must mean that there's actually six people on the ballot. But maybe you'll get instructions. Don't vote for her because she's not running.
Wouldn't you think they would give me everybody? I went to Dearborn Heights to the city clerk last week to get this contact information, and they gave me the sheet of paper. Of course, I left it in my newspaper office, but five names.
Okay,
and,
well, good.
And then, I
just don't know that maybe they were able to take it off the printed ballot, but the article, the one in the Times Herald, said that this incumbent's name, even though she's not running again, is going to be there. On the ballot. So watch out for that if you're in Dearborn Heights.
Yep.
Well, letter to the editor from Pressing Guide, the 12th. I want to get this one in. Some people are against the tax increase, as it's also called the Headley Override Proposal. Dennis Bueller, like Forrest Bueller? Dennis Bueller, no relation, I'm sure, said vote no. And I just wanted to share that with you. I don't believe in it necessarily. I think both Dearborn and Dearborn Heights need the extra money, and probably coming this way is better. If you got a bigger house, you know, that costs more, you're going to be paying more taxes. So it's like a graduated tax here, and I think that's fair to help save our cities and most of the services. He says, I certainly have to agree with John Connolly, that's a Republican, assessment of the proposed Dearborn Heights Headley override. I did not attend either of the informational meetings. So what does he really know? Sorry. It's Denise. It's not Dennis.
No.
It's Denise Bueller.
But her credibility.
She mentions up front that she didn't attend the informational meetings, and a friend did and gave the handouts that she obtained to the meetings and a synopsis of what went on. Still, that's secondhand information, Denise, as you know, but thank you for being upfront about that. And Denise says, after reading the handouts, I came to the same conclusions as John Connolly. Currently, the city is not $8.4 million in debt. It's a fictional number and not based on reality or any actuarial basis I've been informed of. I think that's because if they don't get the money, they will be that much in debt at the end of the next year. And that's why they're putting that in place now, so they can raise the money to balance the budget by the end of next year. But right now, it's true, Denise, they're not in debt. And that's all I can say to straighten that out. I haven't read the handout. See, I'm disclosing my lack
and
of
we appreciate
knowledge.
That.
Yes, of course. So there's all kinds of ins and outs in that. That's not the same situation in Dearborn, though. So can't use that same argument here in Dearborn. And John Connolly hasn't written anything against the tax increase yet, anyway, in Dearborn. So that was a letter to the editor. I had Dennis here. Sorry, Dennis. I was thinking of you, I guess, but no. It's Denise. Okay. Also, Marty Kaltenbach wrote a letter to the editor on the same page, and I'll just sum it up for you here. He says, because it sort of echoes what I said a few weeks ago, hey, you put all these things on the ballots, and of course, maybe he was thinking of the different proposals about what to do about future cutting of services.
Right.
And he says, Dearborn city officials, the city council, the mayor, you just make the cuts to the service as you need to. Why do the people have to vote on this? I mean, we elect you, represent us. Make the hard decisions.
And that sounds wonderful on paper. The reality is that everybody would have a problem with it if that were the case. You know that.
Well, of course, they'd be criticized, and then they sure. wouldn't. They would automatically lose votes. This way, if they do a lot of polling or whatever, they could say, well, you know, it looks like the majority of people want this, so that's why I'm voting this way. Well, you know, who needs an elected representative if you're going to put everything out to the popular poll? You know, that is just crazy. Polls are not necessarily representative. And even putting something on the ballot, that's, you know, in an off presidential election year like this year, we'll be lucky to have 50% of the people going to the ballot box. And so that doesn't mean much.
And one of the polls they took had 119 people respond in a city of how many, 100,000? That's
right. And they even agreed to that it was not a representative sample. So it's completely invalid.
It's almost
pointless. Anecdotal. Yeah. It's just anecdotal. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can't just say, well, the first 100 people I talked to on the street were against it. That means nothing because you didn't talk to other people. You didn't talk about age, demographics, or who usually votes or not. So, you know, you can't believe these kinds of polls, or even if they put it on the ballot. So, you know, we elect the representatives because we probably think they're good people. And I think most of us, we trust them to make decisions for us. Sure, if we don't like it, we won't vote for them again.
Sure.
That's the political way of doing it. But you can't pass everything along to the public in a difficult issue. Okay, do some polling, read your email, but then you've got to make your own decision. What is best? What is most going to be most efficient, most successful as an answer? And I think the fairest.
And I think it's
the most ethically valid approach.
So sometimes the politicians use it as a cop out, where they're saying, "Look, we got to make cuts here. You get to choose what we cut, whether it's pools or libraries or whatever. But we're making cuts."
So Marty was just sort of, I think, sick and tired of wishy-washy politicians,
and I like that,
who don't stand up and don't seem to have a clear direction for themselves. There's some value in that, and the ballot proposals won't be there anyway. So there you go. Let's see. This is WHFR Dearborn. Our podcast is probably cutting off shortly if you're listening later. We're going to just wrap up here and get to some blues music as Joanne Korchinska on Highway 61 is going to get started in just a moment. Let's see. I had one other issue. On the cover of the Pressing Guide from last Sunday, the Dearborn millage, which is 3.5 mils over 5 years, okay?
Right.
It's not necessarily going to save all services. Just like we said, the library needs about 2 mils
They're asking
on a
for
budget
one.
To maintain what they've been doing, but they're only asking for one. So that means if the city says, well, people only wanted 1 mil and we're not going to fund the rest from general funds, well, then there's still going to be massive cuts in our library system, whether you agree with that or not. So they didn't ask for enough mills to actually make it continue, you know, and that's what frustrates me, too. And here, J. Patrick